Don't worry, friends, we haven't been hacked, as far as I know. But we'll hopefully get that technical glitch solved within the next couple minutes. Vanity of vanity, says the teacher. And if you want to open your Bibles to the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, you'll see these words. Vanity of vanity, says the teacher. All is vanity. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. All is vanity. And I say, welcome to Ecclesiastes. All is vapor. This is how this word vanity is sometimes translated. All is vapor. All is smoke. All is meaningless. All is hebel. This is the Hebrew word here that's repeated 38 times throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. Hebel, vanity, smoke, meaninglessness, absurdity. Someone has compared it to a leitmotif and a musical piece. It's like a droning note that plays throughout a song. And I'm going to ask Adolfo, we played Of the Father's Love, we sang Of the Father's Love Begotten at the start of our service. And I'm going to ask Adolfo now to play it, and he's going to play it with this droning E-flat bass pedal note. And I want you to listen, like this is the hebel, like this is the absurdity that's going throughout the piece. So he'll do that for us now. Just listen for that. So you heard that going the whole time. Someone has said that if you're introducing somebody to the Bible, if someone had never read the Bible or picked up a Bible before, you wanted them to read something, you probably wouldn't start with the book of Ecclesiastes. You would maybe start with one of the Gospels. John is usually a favorite. Then maybe you would point someone toward the Psalms, where they could learn about praise and prayer. Then maybe one of the letters, one of Paul's letters, where they could learn about life with Christ and what this life looks like. If we wanted to do a series on mission in our church, we might look at the book of Acts. If we wanted to do a series on social justice, we might look at one of the prophets. We might look at Isaiah. We might look at somebody like Amos. But what are we supposed to do with the book of Ecclesiastes? Traditionally, the book's authorship is ascribed to Solomon, David's son. Most biblical scholars believe it was written sometime between the 5th and the 3rd centuries BC. And at this time, the Jewish community had been restored by the Persians, but they were still a client state. And this would continue through the Age of Empires. It would continue through the Seleucids, through the Ptolemies, right up to the time of the Romans and the time of Christ, up to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD. And one writer describes it like this. And as I like to say, see if any of this resonates. It was a time of cultural malaise that gripped much of the ancient world, beginning with the Persian period. It was a time of turbulent socioeconomic change that prompted many to question the wisdom of the past. An age of melancholy and questioning, a culture of death and disillusionment. And the view that Christians have had of this book through the years has changed. And one view, which was fairly predominant in the last century, goes like this. The book thus shows the low watermark of God-fearing Jews in pre-Christian times. It acts simply as a foil to the gospel, in other words. And there's really nothing for us to be gained from it, at least until we get to the epilogue. Another writer said this. This book, on which many counts, deserves to be in everyone's hands and to be familiar to everyone, has until now been deprived of its reputation and dignity and lain in miserable neglect, so that today we have neither the use nor the benefit from it that we should. And that was Martin Luther, actually, who wrote that about Ecclesiastes. And so I say, let us not be deprived of this book. And let us look at it. I believe that this book is in the Bible for a reason, after all. And I think that God has something of significance in it for us, friends. It's been described as the second most difficult book of the Bible, Job being the first. But I say it can't be that much more difficult than Judges. I believe that for a longtime follower of Christ, if you're a longtime follower of Christ, it might make a change, it might make a welcome change to the usual stuff that we hear in church. I think for those outside of a relationship with Christ, it might present a welcome window. And one writer puts it like this, for many modern agnostics, this book is the last bridge to the Bible. Some Christians today find in Qoleth, and Qoleth is the Hebrew name. Qoleth is the word, you'll see the note in your Bible. Qoleth is the word that's translated preacher in some translations or teacher in our NRSV. So when we say Qoleth or the preacher or the teacher, we're talking about the same person. Some Christians today find in Qoleth a kind of back door, at once sinister and highly esteemed, through which their minds can admit those skeptical and melancholy sentiments that would be refused entry at other points. This is good. The skeptical and melancholy sentiments that we might find, that we might not find entertained at other points of the Bible or at other points of what we talk about in church. And the thing about this book, friends, is this book is searingly honest about the human condition. This book is searingly honest about the human condition. And I believe much of its worth and much of its attraction is to be found in this honesty. I talk about pop culture a lot. But in pop culture, we often find this same sort of searing honesty, right? About the human condition. We find this. You've heard me talk about Peggy Lee's, Is That All There Is? And I've sang it a little bit. Is that all there is? Is that all there is? Peggy Lee's song, Is That All There Is? She musically asks, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is to a circus? Is that all there is to love? As she goes through the verses. And she says, if that's all there is, we might as well just keep on dancing. Rolling Stones, of course, famously put it in 1965 in their song Satisfaction. Can't you see I'm on a losing streak? Can't you see I'm on a losing streak? We want somebody to recognize this. Can't you recognize this? This is the kind of thing that resonates with people to a song that's a little more recent called Born to Die. And this song goes like this. I won't try and sing it. Keep making me laugh. Let's go get high. The road is long. We carry on. Try to have fun in the meantime. Choose your last words. This is the last time. Because you and I, we were born to die. Which is really not such a shocking message, except it might seem so in our death-averse culture. We are all born to die, after all. And the teacher will mention this too. I mean, it's kind of trite. However, there it is. And these are the messages that are out there, and these are the messages that resonate with people, because what we ask is, where do we find meaning in all of this? Where do we find meaningness in all, where do we find meaning, rather, in all this absurdity and smoke and vapor and hebel? And this hebel note sounds right from the beginning. As I said, it sounds right from the beginning of the book. Generations come and go, but the earth remains forever. The psalmist doesn't have, or rather the teacher doesn't have the same view of the sun as the psalmist did, as the psalmist does. If you look at Psalm 19, verses 4 and 5, it's a fairly famous passage. The psalmist sings, "In the heavens God has pitched a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs his course with joy." This is the psalmist's view of the sun. This is the teacher's view of the sun. The sun rises, the sun goes down, and hurries to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes round to the north. Round and round goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full to the place where streams flow. They continue to flow. Old Man River just keeps rolling along. In other words, there's a kind of meaningless circularity to nature here that the teacher is noticing. There's almost a sense of the indifference of the world here. We feel like a meaningless speck in a vast universe which just keeps going. Sometimes in spite of our situation. And as I said earlier, we want to be recognized, don't we? We want our pain to be recognized at times. W.H. Auden puts it like this in a poem called Funeral Blues. And I'll say, poets are searingly honest about the human condition. We should read more poetry. Poets are searingly honest about the human condition. W.H. Auden has a poem called Funeral Blues. And if you've ever seen the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral, you've heard this poem. It's about someone who's in mourning. Someone has died. And the poem starts off, "Stop all the clocks, cut off the telephone, prevent the dog from barking." It's like they want things to stop. It's like life has ended. It goes on, "The stars are not wanted now. Put out every one. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood, for nothing now can ever come to any good." And it's not just nature. It's not just nature for the teacher, but all things are wearisome. What has been is what will be. And what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. And another poet, Edna St. Vincent Millay, put it like this in a letter she wrote. And she said, "The problem is not one thing after another. The problem is the same thing over and over." The problem is not one thing after another. The problem is the same thing over and over. And the teacher then says, "Let me seek out wisdom." "I applied my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this is also but a chasing after wind, for in much wisdom is much vexation, and those who increase knowledge increase sorrow." And you wouldn't want to make that your school motto. Those who increase knowledge increase sorrow. You can laugh. It's not all bad. It's going to get better. Trust me. Just stay with me. I know it sounds bad right now. It's going to get better. Stay with me, Jenna. There it is. So wisdom was no good. So the teacher thought he would try pleasure. "I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and of the provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and delights of the flesh, and many concubines. And that didn't work either. So the teacher said, let me seek work. Let me try work. Maybe that will do. And maybe that will provide meaning. No. I hated all my toil in which I had toiled under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to those who come after me. And who knows whether they will be wise or foolish, yet they will be master of all for which I toil and use my wisdom under the sun. So in other words, what is the use of wisdom? What is the use of pleasure? What is the use of toil? And going back again to Jagger Richards, and it's funny because these are all in the song. When I'm driving in my car and a man comes on the radio, he's telling me more and more about some useless information, trying to fire my imagination, wisdom. And when I'm flying around the world and I'm doing this and I'm trying to do that, work. I'm trying to make some girl concubines. And I'm doing this, and she tells me, baby, better come back later next week. Can't you see I'm on a losing streak? Can't you see? And we want this to be recognized. We want to be recognized. And the teacher wants to be remembered. And we want to be remembered because there's no enduring remembrance of the wise or fools, seeing that in the days to come all will have been forgotten. We want to be remembered. And we ask, what's it all about? What's it all about? And the teacher says, so I hated life. So I hated life. And the teacher's being searingly honest. And we're not engaging in small talk at this point, friends. We're not engaging in small talk. We're talking about the meaning of life. So what are we to do with all of this? What are we to do? There's a time for everything. There's a famous passage in Ecclesiastes 3 we're going to look at next week. And it talks about there being a time for everything, the bird song, turn, 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 right? We're going to look at this next week, so I don't want to talk too much about it now or sing it. But this passage goes like this. There's a time to plant. And there's a time to pluck up what is planted. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to dance. You know the passage. So the thing is, if there's a time for Hebel, if there's a time for absurdity and vapor and vanity and meaninglessness and mist, well, there's also a time for non-Hebel. If there's a time for absurdity, friends, there's also a time for non-absurdity. And coming to the realization that all of these things which we've been talking about are but a chasing after wind, what this can do is it can bring us to the realization that we need outside help. And this is where things are turning. This is where it's starting to get good. Because when we look at all these things as vanity, it can lead us to realizing we need help. We need outside intervention. We're beyond the point of looking for the point within ourselves. When we're honest about this stuff, we're beyond that point. We're beyond the point of finding strength in Facebook posts like this. This isn't going to help me. I don't know about you. And you know what? If it helps you, that's fine. And if you shared something like this, okay. But please don't share it on my wall. I'll unfollow you. No, I won't. I'm just kidding. Well, I might actually. If you want to be strong, learn to fight alone. It's all up to you. And we're beyond the teacher And as we follow the teacher, we're beyond being inspired by things like this. Motivational posters, which used to adorn offices. I don't know if they still do. I asked Abby about it, and I guess they don't. Maybe it was like an 80s, 90s thing, Margaret? I don't know. Hang in there. Be strong. Okay, thanks. Because I want to be recognized. And I want my pain to be recognized. And I want to be remembered. And I need help. And if we're honest about this, we can be honest about the possibility that we might need some help from somewhere outside of ourselves. When we read, "I hated my life," we shouldn't merrily say, "Tsk, tsk, how horrible for him to say that." This should not be our reaction. Our reaction should be to remember the one who said, "Those who love their life will lose it. And those who hate their life in the world will keep it for eternal life." So look at how that fit in. Those who hate their life in this world will keep it. Jesus is not talking about founding a death cult. He's not talking about founding a death cult. He's not saying that we should desire death. He's talking about the meaninglessness, the absurdity, the hebel of constant striving for wisdom and pleasure and toil. And to find life and to find meaning in him. To be remembered in him, to be remembered by him, to be remembered. No one is remembered, the teacher says. But what was the prayer of the dying thief beside Jesus on the cross? What was it? "Remember me. Remember me when you come in your kingdom." And Jesus answered that prayer, friends. And you know what he said? "Today," he said, "you'll be with me." Today. And this promise is for us too. Today, Jesus is saying, "I remember you. I remember you," because sometimes, friends, we feel dismembered. The teacher cries out, "There's no enduring remembrance of the wiser fools." And then Jesus strides onto the stage and he says, "Wait a minute." He says, "Wait a minute." And he comes to remember those of us who've been dismembered and in the middle of a world that's at worst hostile and at best indifferent, in a world in which it might seem it's the same thing over and over. Jesus comes to us and he remembers us. And this is something to be thankful for. And I asked Adolfo to play that song. And he played that droning E-flat note, that bass pedal note. And I said, "Listen for the hebel." But we also heard that there's something more than that, right? We heard that there was this melody. That there's also this melody playing as we go through our lives. And this hebel is droning on. There's also this melody. And this morning, friends, in our text, the melody is saying that Jesus remembers us and that Jesus is a gift from God. And he brings us back to God. And he calls us to his table. Jesus, the gift of God, calls us to his table. The teacher recognizes this. Toward the end, I guess it's 24 and 25. Chapter 2, verses 24 and 25. The teacher recognizes the importance, the vital importance. I can't put this strongly enough. Importance isn't strong enough. Vital importance. Of recognizing and acknowledging God's gifts. It's terrible to give a gift and to not have it acknowledged, right? I was thinking about this. And maybe this is only me. You know, you're driving and you're in a line of traffic and you let somebody in, and you've let them in, and it wasn't through any great driving that they did that they got in, but it was an act of grace, right? We like them to wave, right? Make some eye contact. And we get a little put out when they don't, right? We realize the importance of acknowledging gifts. It's innate, I think. It's terrible to give a gift and not have it acknowledged. It's of vital importance to recognize that everything we have in life is a gift from God. Everything we have in life is a gift from God. And this is what the teacher is talking about. Yeah. This also I saw is from the hand of God. To recognize that these things are from the hand of God. One writer talks about it like this. This is a great phrase. I wish I wrote this phrase. To find glory in the ordinary. To find glory in the ordinary. And the teacher puts it like that. There is nothing better for mortals than to eat and drink and find enjoyment in their toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat and drink and have enjoyment? So you see, there's stuff throughout this book that's good. It's not just at the end. It's not just at the end where everything turns around. This stuff's being recognized throughout. To hate life, friends, to hate life doesn't mean to hate the things in our lives. To hate life doesn't mean to hate the things in our lives. It means to come to a realization that basing your life on striving is absurdity. Basing your life on striving, whether we're talking about striving for toil or striving for wisdom or striving for pleasure, is absurdity. To recognize that we do not find fulfillment in constant striving after whatever it is we strive after, but that we find fulfillment in receiving the gifts of God. We find fulfillment in receiving the gifts of God. And this is a reason for joy, right? Again, this is where it's getting good. This is a reason for joy. The banana that I ate this morning, because I eat a banana every morning, was a gift from God. The coffee that I drank this morning, and many of you will agree vociferously, the coffee I drank this morning was a gift from God. How joyous, right? Yes? Thank you, Sheila. So here's the thing. We do this once a month, right? Some people do it more often. Some people do it less often. But when we come around the Lord's table, friends, we're reminded of God's gift, and we're reminded of God's ultimate gift. We're reminded of Christ. Every time we come around this table, we're acknowledging God's greatest gift. And one writer puts it like this very well. For Quoleth, the teacher, those who continually strive for possessions bar the door and thereby forsake the joy that is found within the most ordinary and natural of events in the daily rhythm of life. That's good, eh? Let me read that again. Those who continually strive for possessions bar the door and thereby forsake the joy that is found within the most ordinary and natural of events in the daily rhythm of life. Because they're thinking about getting more possessions, right? They can't even sleep sometimes. We'll talk about that more in the weeks to come. Back to the quote. At the Lord's table, all self-striving is banished. All self-striving is banished. Acknowledging the fellowship and unity of the body, the church, is paramount. The integrity of the table rests in part on the quality of fellowship and hospitality. As the Eucharist is the supreme act of fellowship and joy in community, so eating and drinking for Quoleth is the communal embodiment of the joy that comes from the hand of God. This comes from the hand of God, and it brings us joy. the hand of God. And from the hand of God, friends, we've received the gift of a son. We've received a gift of a son from the hand of God. So may we eat and drink this day, friends, together. And may we find glory in the ordinary. Glory in the ordinary. May we find God's glory. And when I say God's glory, I'm talking about finding God's love and God's grace and God's mercy in the ordinary. In little cups of kosher grape juice that we bought at Fortino's yesterday. Imagine finding glory in this, in little pieces of bread. In the same way, friends, that we saw some glory in some water, one of the most commonplace things around, right? We saw some glory not too many weeks ago in some water when dear Eden and dear Mickey followed their Lord through the waters of baptism. And water's one of the most ordinary things around. And in a few moments, we're going to find some glory in a piece of felt. Again, a very ordinary thing, because we're going to welcome Eden into membership here. And seeing those two young women follow their Lord through the waters of baptism, friends, was a gift. Yes? You can answer that. Yeah. Seeing those two young women follow Jesus through the waters of baptism was a gift. And standing at the front with Pastor Abby and Eden is a gift for me to welcome Eden into this fellowship and to have everybody stand up and affirm that we're going to support her. This is a gift for Eden. It's a gift for all of us. Eden, you didn't know you'd be so much in this sermon. I didn't mind, if you don't mind. No, you're good. You're good. These things are gifts, friends. And as we're considering these things, and as we're going through the book of Ecclesiastes and living our lives through which that note of Hebel sounds, yes, it does, but there's also a melody sounding up here. And may we evermore come to know that melody, friends, and to know that apart from God, there's only vapor. May these things be evermore true for all of us. Amen.